welcome everybody to the Waited Pod Created. I'm Pierre Camus. With me as always, Nicholas Gott, and we have a special guest, former Trinity Tiger alum. That's right, Eric Cebulski, and a fellow teacher, should I add, and of course, a fellow baseball fiend. Eric, how are you holding up these days?
I'm good. You know, hunkered down, sitting in front of my computer, teaching some online classes, but it's been an adjustment, but, you know, feeling good, happy, home.
Yeah. And Nick, I assume since we see you on camera, you're still alive. Yes. Still doing well.
Yes. Still alive. Still kicking. Mostly haven't been out of my house very much because it's me and the children versus the world. But yeah, still alive and kicking.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for the day. I keep imagining like the next time I step outside that it's going to be like The Walking Dead, where it's just like ambulance is flipped over and just nobody around. I mean, that's, it's not quite that bad. If you go to the grocery store, it is kind of that bad, though.
It's close. I went outside just to walk for like 5 minutes today in Brooklyn, and there's just nobody on the streets. But you know, it's eerie out there.
Yeah, different times for sure. We're not here to talk about that. We already did that. We're going to talk about fantasy baseball because what better distraction? Even though I think we're guessing at this point, we're looking at what, maybe a June opening, something like that. We don't have too much optimism that opening day is going to be early May anymore, right?
I don't think so.
Not for me.
But when it does start, and it will, right? We'll have baseball at some point this year, and we're going to talk about must-have players. You saw that right. We already did must-have players. But so nice, we got to do it twice. And we want to know who Eric's must-have players are because he's got some players he's mentioned. If you haven't read his work on rotoballer.com, of course, I advise you to check it out now. We're going to start off with a guy that, I dare say, you must have some sort of a man crush on because you've now mentioned Rougned Odor in approximately 37 articles. Tell us why. Why do you love Odor so much?
Listen, I think it'll be, I got a second base sleeper article coming out soon. So I feel like it'll go up by one more article. But this is one of those things that it was not intentional at all. You know, I was on Nick Solak last year. I picked him up in one of my main leagues and I was kind of just hoping, you know, he's going to get a spot this year and it's going to be great. He'll be a full-time guy. And I was fully intending to write off Odor. And the more I looked into it, the more I just kind of started to see, you know, consistent things that got me excited. First, he came up on my barrels article in terms of the improvements in barrel percentage over the year. He jumped from 7.2% barrels per batted ball event in 2018 to 13.6 last year. He was a launch angle riser on the launch angle article that I did. He had a hard hit percentage in the 86th percentile. His walk percentage has gone up consecutively for the last 3 years from 4.9% to 9%, which isn't crazy, but for a guy who had terrible plate discipline metrics early on, I think that paired with the fact that his O swing has dropped for 3 years in a row, all of that stuff shows growth. And I think it's also crazy is like he just turned 26. I think we think of Odor as being super old because he broke into Major League Baseball in 2014, but he's 26, which means, I guess, statistically speaking, he's entering his prime right now. He's had major growth in plate discipline metrics. He's had 30 home runs and 10 stolen bases in three of the last 4 years, which isn't something that's common. And then the other thing I looked at, I was like, okay, he's a batting average anchor. He'll crush your batting average. But you go back and you look at his batting averages and yes, two of, you know, the last few years, he's been terrible. But in 2018, he hit 253. He hit 271 in 2016, and he hit 261 in 2016. So he's hit over 250 in three of the last 5 years. So what's to say he can't be a 230, 240 hitter? And when you pair that with 30 home runs and 10 stolen bases, and this is a guy going around pick 220, 230, depending on where you set your parameters. I mean, to me, that's pretty solid value.
Yeah. Well, you answered one of my questions. I was going to say you worried about the, you know, batting average sink, but apparently not. And it's true. I mean, if you're going to get a guy who has, you know, 30 home run upside, obviously you got to trade off somewhere and he can also steal you bases. So, Nick, let me ask you this, because Odor is going right now, according to the last couple of weeks' NFBC data, he's going about 217 overall, right behind Colton Wong, who's a guy who will get you some, you know, higher average and steal some bases, but of course not quite as much power. Does this kind of depend on where you've gone earlier in your draft as far as you prioritize one or the other? Or, you know, would you rather have a safer guy, maybe like Wong, who we know is hitting, should be hitting toward the top of the order?
Oh, yeah, I'm with Eric. Give me Odor. I've been on him for many years. I've went through, like, there's be support group for Odor owners over the years.
I'll join it now.
As we've endured the 50 strikeout months or whatever he'll do, because nobody gets cold like Odor does, but nobody gets hot either. And the things Eric brought up, the 13.6% barrel rate last year was big improvement, top 8% in the league. The hard hit rate, monster. He has 30 home run potential. He's going to steal double digit bags. And like Eric said, he is often a batting average sink, but he's shown multiple times that he is capable of putting up a decent batting average.
Yeah.
And only 26. Like, I'll keep buying him. That ADP is kind of ridiculous. You know, using ATC projections calculated for SGP dollars, I have him as just inside a top 150 player. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have me some Odor. I have him every year, especially in my league where you get double points for punching Jose Bautista in the face. He's a monster in that league.
Those are those niche leagues. They're great. Yeah.
Yeah. That should be a separate
I think
category.
Also, you know, the interesting thing you talk about the batting average sink, I mean, while it is there, I also think that swing and miss is becoming so much more prevalent in baseball. I mean, the league average, you know, I mean, the K percentage is rising drastically across the league because as guys are kind of building in more swing and miss into their game when they're changing the launch angle to go for more power. I mean, yes, listen, Odor had a 30.6 K percentage last year. It's astronomical. But the years before, I mean, you got 23.7, 21.4. Those are way more in line with the average of Major League Baseball. They're a little higher, but they're not as crazy high as 30%. So I think if you get him to his normal, to his career average K percentage, which is going to be a little bit above league average, you're going to rise that batting average above the 205 that he had last year to something kind of like 220-ish, 230-ish. I mean, I realistically wouldn't project over like 235, but I think even if you get 235, I mean, how is 235 with 30 home runs, 10 stolen bases, somebody that's going, you know, pick 220, as you're saying?
Yeah, and, you know, like Absolutely. You said, Nick, you've got him as a top 150 player. He's going, you know, 60-something spots later. Obviously, that's somebody you want to target, you know, if possible. And I would say one thing that maybe helps him, the fact that, you know, with Solak, there was some worry that he might kind of slide in and compete with him. But if Calhoun is out, and of course that might change the fact that if it doesn't start until June, you know, Calhoun might be back. But the idea was Solak is going to start out in the outfield and then that competition isn't there. So something to watch out for, of course, depending on when opening day actually is.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to a non-Odor player. Mitch Keller is next on the list, and I'm on the verge of having him as a must-have guy. He's not quite somebody I feel like I have to get, but he's somebody that I know a lot of people are expecting kind of a breakout for because I read somewhere he was one of the unluckiest pitchers in his short time last year. Eric, talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sugarcoating that statistically that time in the majors last year was not good for him. I mean, nobody's looking at a 7.13 ERA and a 1.83 WHIP and saying, you know, I got to have this on my team. You know, he had a 3.43 batting average against. So while he was unlucky, he also wasn't particularly good. You know, but he had a 3.47 xFIP. So that's a major difference. And then you look at where that discrepancy is, and I think a lot of it, the BABIP that he let up was 475. I mean, a 475 BABIP is huge. He still had really good K percentage. He had a 21.6 K percentage minus walk percentage. He had 11.8 swinging strike percentage. So he's getting swinging strikes. And then I listened to, you know, if you've been following, everybody's talking about like the new kind of Pirates pitching philosophy, right? They've kind of out with the old, in with the new. There's more fastballs up, you know, off speed down, the stuff that Musgrove was talking about and over the offseason. I think if that's true, it really benefits Keller because both his slider and his curve showed plus last year. The slider had a 47.8 whiff percentage, 29.5 put away percentage. The curve had a 34 whiff percentage and a 25.5 put away percentage. So I think if he's able to get those fastballs up and then kind of bury the off-speed pitches, he has the repertoire to put up a super high K percentage. And then you just, you have to figure that you know, the difference between the ERA, xFIP, all that kind of balances out a little bit. And maybe you're looking at a, like a 3.8, 3.9 ERA guy with some good strikeout numbers. And I think that's really worth it where he's going, also around like pick 220 right now.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that with the Pirates' philosophy in pitching. You know, for a while, it's like, oh, they got Searidge, you know, this great pitching coach, and, you know, Pirates pitchers, we can trust them. But I think it wasn't Glasnow who said something. They asked him, you know, oh, what kind of technology do you guys use, and what do you value? He's like, technology? He's like, no, they're just technology. Like, pitch them in and pitch hard, you know? Like, that was basically the coaching they got. I was like, all right. So
he said the quote was like, go out there and throw, kid. You're like, okay.
That's what he paid the big bucks for. Nick, you feeling a Keller breakout?
I like Eric said, the news of the kind of change in the Pirates pitching philosophy, I think bodes really well for him. He's got the pedigree. He's got the velocity. He has two off-speed pitches that have shown plus before. Like, he has the tools. If it is true that, you know, the Pirates pitching development is going to get a little bit better now, great. But even, you know, the ERA was atrocious, but like Eric said, the peripherals were a lot better. He had a 3.78 Sierra last year. I think, you know, what Eric's saying, a 3.8, 3.9 ERA, that is very reasonable. High K percentage, could be a lot higher. And his ADP is like, you know, past 200. That's even if he doesn't have a monster breakout, that's a really good price for him. If he does break out, you're going to earn a ton of profit getting Keller after 200.
There you go. Low risk, potential high reward. That's the kind of guys we want to target here, right?
So
just to clarify, when we say must have, we're not saying like Mike Trout and like, yeah, you should go and get him. I think it's pretty obvious in the early rounds, you know what you're getting. So who are the guys you need to target in the middle, later rounds? You know, the ones who you feel are going to deliver that return on investment. So that's what we're going for. Nick, you're up next. A guy I'm just got to admit, I'm not sold on, never quite been sold on, but you're going to have your chance. Talk me into Brandon Nimmo for the Mets.
Oh, man. I know you guys know I'm a Jack Flaherty truther. I'm a Dennelson Lamet truther, but I haven't even talked about Nimmo all off season, and I will talk about Nimmo until you won't let me. He is one of he's one of those guys that we kind of forgot about due to circumstance and injury. He was a hot commodity after a breakout 2018, 535 plate appearances, 17 home runs, 77 runs. Score 263 average and 148 WRC plus. Very hot coming into 2019, was being drafted as like next breakout. And then he came out first 2 weeks of the season. He was fine. Two home runs, had a 108 WRC plus through his first 60 at bats. And then he ran into a wall and he kept playing, even though he had a jammed neck. It turned out it was a lot more serious than that, and missed all of the summer. He was really bad. He played for 3-4 weeks with that neck and hit 177, one home run, just absolutely atrocious. Went from batting leadoff for the Mets. They dropped him down to 6-7 until he finally went on the IL. Gone all summer, comes back September 1st and goes back to exactly hitting like he did in 2018. 93 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 14 runs scored, 15 RBI, 2 stolen bases, 261 average. we've seen him be good before. He's came back after injury and was the exact same. And I just, he's one of those guys that kind of makes me feel like I'm crazy because I see my values on him. And I see his ADP of 327 and I don't get it. I mean, he has 17 home runs in 2018 and 535 plate appearances. Mets have already announced that he's going to be playing leadoff for them. I see him, even though the projection systems have him for 500 PA, I think he's going to get closer to 600 because while the Mets do have a crowded outfield, I don't think it's crowded for Nimmo and Conforto so much. I think it's a lot more crowded for JD Davis trying to fight off people with his big stick and just terrible glove. So Nimmo is just, he's basically free. I have him projected for 22 home runs, 85 RBI, 85 runs scored, 65 RBI, 11 stolen bases, 58 average. That's about what he did in 2018. And my earnings on him for that have him. I think I have him as the number 29 outfielder right behind Kepler. Those values. Now, granted, these are not my final rankings. These are ATC projections, ran them through standings gain calculator, and they spit out that. And then I make adjustments from there. But Nimmo, given his price and given what we've already seen him do before, I'm going to get him all over the place.
No, that's a pretty good case. I guess for me, I just stuck in my mind, sometimes I kind of have a hard time getting initial impressions out. I feel like when he first came up, he had that, you know, hot streak when we didn't know who he was. He had that monster tear, and then he just kind of came back to earth. And I feel like his value just got inflated because partially, you know, our initial impression, but also playing in New York, I feel like we kind of just naturally kind of overinflate those guys who are in the big markets. But batting leadoff, that's certainly going to help him, at least with the counting stats. Eric, where do you sit on the Nimmo offense?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see it, first of all. I mean, you know, being here in New York, I've always enjoyed kind of watching him. When he broke out in 2018, I thought he was a real fun player. There are some things in the stats that are mildly concerning. I mean, I think we were talking about Odor's K rate before. Nimmo has a surprisingly high K rate for a guy that we think of hitting at the top of the order. I mean, I think he's been over 26% in every year that he's been in the big leagues. The walk percentage is phenomenal. I mean, if you're playing in an OBP league or an OPS league or something that kind of that rewards the on-base percentage, he has definitely some extra value in there. I think that, you know, to what Nick was saying, I do think that the power is closer to the 17 home runs in 2018 than what we've seen since. I mean, the exit velocity, the launch angle, all of that supports, you know, him being a 15, 16, 20 home run bat. And, you know, I mean, I think the top of the order does give him good percentage, good likelihood at like at least a 2010 season with good run totals. I mean, you know, I think I'm like that crazy New Yorker who is like, well, what happens if Cespedes is healthy? I think it's highly unlikely, but like, you know, in the back of my head, sure. If Cespedes comes back and he's healthy and Conforto's healthy and Davis is hitting, I mean, they've played Conforto in center before. I don't think it's a legitimate threat to Nimmo's value. I think it's one of those, like, you know, real slim chances where, you know, he's playing 5 out of 7 games as opposed to, you know, 7 out of 7. But again, you're banking on Cespedes' health, which at this point I wouldn't recommend doing. So I think, you know, as to Nick's point, based on where he's going, I think it's a definite shot to take. Because, you know, if he's not coming out hot, if he gets moved from top of the order to eighth, you know, if you have to cut bait, you're not really, you didn't sink a lot into him. So I think it's definitely worth it where he's going right now.
Yeah, and I think that's the best case to be made for him right now is, I mean, he's basically an afterthought in drafts, which is surprising when you consider how high Conforto seems to be rising up. JD Davis, we've talked about how crazy his ADP is, for some reason keeps climbing. And Nimmo, it's like we forgot he's there. So I will, though, have to say I did take Cespedes with my very last pick in TGFBI.
Why
so
not?
I'm hoping, right? I'm hoping.
Sure.
Maybe this doesn't.
And, And I guess it would have to be fair. I mean, you know, the baseball is going to be in a long layoff, but Conforto did have an oblique injury before spring training got shut down. And we do know how those things can linger. It's probable that by the time we're playing again, it's not a factor, but who knows? So if we're talking about, you know, impediments to Nimmo's playing time, it would only be fair to talk about the fact that there are a bunch of beat up outfielders besides him. So it's not, you know, he could be looking at 500 plus at bats like Nick was talking about.
Hey, that you definitely want a guy that late, especially. Yeah, sign me up. All right, Nick, you made your case. I'm a believer now. I'm gonna target Nimmo everywhere now. Now, wow.
As well, you should.
Someplace. All right. All right, moving on. It's my turn. I'm going to talk about a guy that I'm kind of targeting because I think that the value could be really good, especially now with the delay, because we know we've talked about guys maybe on innings limits that should shoot up boards because we don't have to worry about that quite as much anymore. And so I'm going to go with AJ Puck in Oakland. Now, here's what's interesting to me, and tell me if I'm crazy for thinking this way. So we have Jesus Luzardo. Right. And a lot of people think he could be a breakout guy, maybe even better than Keller. And he's going, if I see it correctly, right now, this is most recent NFBC data just from March, 107 overall, which that's pretty high to me. But still, crazy. I mean, I get it. Yeah. Puck is going at 255. And so that's a late round guy. I mean, we're talking about some other pitchers who are going around that area. Aaron Civale in Cleveland, Ryan Yarbrough, Dallas Keuchel, Dylan Cease. Puck was a pretty good pitcher, I think, right? College and pretty good prospect before he had Tommy John. So why is there such a big discrepancy, especially now? I mean, I get maybe the innings limit, but I thought both these guys – didn't they say not that long before spring training was canceled that there's not really going to be a hard cap on them anyways? So Eric, let me throw it to you first. Why such difference between those two?
I wish I could tell you. I mean, I guess what's interesting is that I've been hearing a lot more chatter about Puck being a potential bullpen arm than Luzardo. Oh. And I wish I could say that that would be injury related, but they both suffered. They both had arm injuries before. So whether there are just people out there that don't believe in Puck's secondaries as much, his full repertoire, whether he just, you know, doesn't have enough real sexy GIFs that get posted swing and miss on the internet. So everybody's, you know, on the Luzardo train. I personally think that Luzardo probably is a better bet for sticking in the rotation, but I see Puck as a starting pitcher. But I also don't think that if the talk of him, you know, going in the bullpen for load management, at which, as you pointed out, is maybe not as big of a deal with a lesser season. But I think also, I think he's shown that regardless of what role he pitches, he's going to be a real effective arm. And, you know, I also kind of think, like, I was noted, you know, reading Alex Fast's piece about drafting saves wrong. Oakland hasn't had a repeat saves leader since 2012, 2013. So if they put Puck in the rotation, in the bullpen, what's to say he doesn't become their closer? He's a dominant, he has shown flashes of being dominant for short stretches. So I think at the ADP you're talking about, you're getting a super effective arm, whether that's in a starting role, whether that's in a multi-inning relief role, whether that's as a closer. I kind of think he's a real solid value now that we're going to be playing in a shortened season.
So I guess I hadn't heard that, you know, the idea that Puck would just go to the bullpen. I mean, I figure they just view him as a starter. And so I'm not sure. Again, obviously it makes sense they want to play it safe with him, right? Be careful. But yeah, I guess I just assumed they were going to try him the rotation first.
And I think that's also what you get in a draft season, right? You get a couple people who throw some reports out that it's possible he goes to the bullpen. And whether that's, you know, spoken from an organizational perspective, or that's a beat writer, or it's just somebody who, you know, writes about baseball who's watching him and thinks that he's more of a bullpen arm. But when that narrative starts getting out there, I think that's baked into, you know, people's draft decisions. For whatever reason, we have this idea that Luzardo is more of a sure thing in the rotation than Puck. And whether there's any validity to that or not, I mean, I think it's too young in either of their careers to know for sure. But I think that's a huge reason why you're seeing part of that ADP discrepancy.
Yeah, makes sense. Nick, where do you stand on Puck? Do you think that this is a good value, or is it a little too much risk here?
I think it's a great value. And for honestly, I'm really on the same page with Eric on this, is that I think he's a starter. Some people have brought up the bullpen, the possibility of him landing in the bullpen. To the best of my knowledge, I think that is outside organizational talk. I have Puck on a couple of dynasty teams, so I usually follow too much of his stuff. But from what Oakland has said this offseason is that, you know, for what it's worth, that they believe that he is a starter going forward, and they'll be giving him every chance to be a starter. Even if he's not, like Eric said, he's going to give you some quality innings out of the bullpen. And, you know, we've talked about it before, Pierre. I really like those guys coming out of the bullpen that, are going to get you good ratios, a lot of Ks, and high leverage innings. And like Eric said, it's Oakland. He could be their closer. Would anyone really be that surprised if at the end of this year, AJ Puck had the most saves on Oakland? So whatever his role I'm loving him at that ADP. He's what, a 270 something ADP. I, especially in this delayed season, you know, you like guys that were going to be, you thought were going to throw less innings, even more. And a lot of the ADP thing, I think, is because he has someone shining so bright next to him in kind of the same age bracket position in Luzardo. And when that happens, guys like Puck will get shoved off to the side and forgotten about because they are not as shiny and with as much upside as Luzardo has. I mean, I'm not going to have – I love Luzardo. I have him on a couple of dynasty teams. I like him a lot. But there's no chance I'm going to be able to draft him at that ADP this year. Like, it's just not doable. So, yeah, give me Puck at that ADP for sure.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's funny that Luzardo is the shiny object now. And I remember, what was it, 2 years ago? Puck was their top pitching prospect. And, you know, Luzardo was coming up. But still, he was the guy. And, of course, he got hurt, missed the year. And then we forget about him. Mm-hmm. And it's like he's nothing now. And that's the thing. It's not I'm avoiding Luzardo. But, I mean, he's getting close to the top 100 overall. To me, that's a little insane.
That's crazy.
Right. And then, you know, Puck's like an afterthought. But reminds me of a guy we did talk about, just last week. Guy that, you know, whether he's in the bullpen or a starter, maybe it doesn't work out in the rotation, but, you know, he's got great stuff, a strong arm, maybe not a ton of secondary pitches, but maybe it doesn't matter, like Freddy Peralta, right? He's a guy that I'm going to take a chance on the talent anyway. So, that's a guy that, I mean, if I can get him around that range, I want to have him. All right, let's go to, I believe this is one of yours, Eric, again, maybe some New York bias. Tell us about Brett Gardner.
It's not, I mean, listen, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I don't want to talk about Yankee players if I don't.
Red Sox fan, you got NYC in your Twitter handle, but you're a Red Sox fan.
I come from a Polish family. So my dad grew up a huge Karol Yastrzemski fan because that's kind of like, you know, the great Polish icon. My family's from Buffalo, far enough outside of the city that you kind of pick where you're supporting in a sense. But yeah, he grew up a young Polish kid infatuated by Yaz, and I was kind of born into the Red Sox household.
Nice. So we'll assume that Mike Yastrzemski is going to be a no brain must have, right?
Yeah, got to have him. You got to have it. the Brett Gardner thing was actually interesting. I've come to this late in doing the Launch Angle podcast, the Launch Angle article that I did. I noticed that, so on July 4th of last year, Brett Gardner's average launch angle was under 8 degrees. And he had spent most of the first half of last season under the MLB average launch angle. And then he made a drastic and what had to be conscious change to his launch angle because it spiked considerably and then stayed up throughout the entire second half of last season. He finished last season at 13.6 degrees on his launch angle. And to me, that signals a drastic shift, and it signals a drastic shift in a aging left-handed hitter in a short porch Yankee stadium who's trying to get more effective now that his speed is not what it was before. And it worked for him, because if you look at what happens to the rest of his results, he in August had 10 doubles and 3 home runs. And then with the shift in the launch angle in September, he has 3 doubles and 10 home runs. So it basically flips totally. In addition, we talked about the short porch at Yankee Stadium. His pull percentage last year jumped by 8% up to 46.4% pull percentage, which again says to me, left-handed hitter, short porch in right field, raising the launch angle, pulling the ball more. It seems like a given that he's shooting for something, right? He understands what can make him effective in that park. He had 28 home runs last year, and most of the projection systems are calling for him to hit 14. I just don't see it. I mean, I think that this is a really conscious change in approach. I think 20 home runs seems like a floor to me based on his 28 from last year. So I think you're looking at a guy who could hit 20 home runs with 10 stolen bases, hitting in what is still going to be a dynamic Yankees lineup, even if they're shuffling injured guys in and out. And he's currently going after pick 300. So I would never want to voluntarily promote a Yankee for baseball for fantasy purposes, but I just think the value is too good right now.
Yeah, especially considering every other Yankee outfielder is hurt. I mean, obviously the playing time is going to be there for him. The question is, and Nick, let me ask you this, because I mean, it's obvious the speed's, you know, kind of going away. Obviously he's what, 35 now, going from 23 steals down to 16, down to 10, you know, 10 might be what you're hoping for. So right. Even if he does get you 25, you know, 20, 25 homers, something like that, does this still excite you enough? Because obviously a lot harder to get a guy who's going to get you 20 steals than 30 homers these days. And you know, for both of you guys, are you worried maybe that the juice ball effect was that, is this a guy who maybe just benefited? And if the ball goes back to being somewhat normal, you know, are we going to see him drop down to maybe 14 home runs or something? I mean, Nick, what are you projecting for him this year, I guess?
No, I don't think he's going to hit 28 home runs again. But man, like Eric said, I'm looking at the projection systems here. It's 16 for ATC, 16 for depth charts, 17 for steamer. Like, I see 20 is way more right, and way, you know, 20 to 25 feel, you know, 25 at a ceiling feels, you know, more comfortable for me. Things Eric mentioned about his, you know, what seems to be a very conscious change in approach, losing his speed in his old age, trying to get back some of that in power, and trying to take advantage of the ballpark he plays in, which is one of the best ballparks in baseball for left-handed power. He's pulling the ball more, he's getting the ball up into the air more, and he's hitting more home runs. You know, 20 plus home runs, around 10 steals is, you know, I'm not counting on more than that. A 250 batting average, playing time that is way more guaranteed given that all of his teammates are made out of glass. A 300 ADP, you know, I see him as, you know, I have him in, you know, values around the 240 range. Those are guys that I love to grab at the end of drafts. Like, yeah, wait on his 300 ADP. I'll take him around 250, 260, and take those 20 home runs, double-digit steals, and take my profit. And, you know, I hope you do better with your, you know, 23rd round pick.
And I think the run total also is something that sometimes we underrate. I mean, hitting in that lineup, you're looking at 80, 90 runs. And, you know, you get a number that high from somebody that late. I think that, you know, runs, because they're dependent on batting order more than some of the other categories, I think sometimes we just don't factor it in as much when we're drafting. I mean, it's so easy to look at, like, I've got to get my home runs, I've got to get my stolen bases, or I got my home runs and this guy is a 220 average, so now I have to get batting average. I rarely hear people say, I have to get runs. I have to get my runs. So I think it's a category that oftentimes, you know, you look up at the end of the draft and you're like, oh, I've got a bunch of guys that if they're not hitting 40 home runs, I'm not going to get a lot of runs. And you add that to what Nick was saying after 300. And I think he's a great guy when you've kind of loaded up on, like, I'm going to take my, you know, maybe you're going to take your Trent Grishams, You're going to take, you know, your Franmil Reyeses. You're going to take like the younger upside outfielders that might kind of pop. You're going to take your, you know, Luis Roberts and your guys who like maybe have this ridiculous upside. And then at 250, 260, I'm going to take my solid floor. And I know what I'm going to get from him. And it's not going to wow anybody, but it's going to stabilize the rest of it. It's going to allow me to take those risks early in the draft. And I think that he's a really valuable piece for that.
That's actually a really great point, because it's true. We get caught up and we talk, what do we talk about? Home runs and steals, right? The sexy categories, and runs are not sexy, but you know, you're playing 5x5. Last I checked, they all count the exact same, those categories. You know, runs obviously hard to predict, but it's pretty easy to figure out that if a guy's at the top of the order, like you talked about with Nimmo and with him, you know, or in a better lineup, there's a better chance, at least, that they're going to score those runs. But yeah, I mean, it's not the most exciting. It's kind of like Brett Gardner. Yeah, you want to take this young outfielder, you know, like a Kyle Lewis or a Seth Brown or somebody who may not even wind up starting, you know, halfway through the year and could get you nothing, when you know Gardner's pretty good, going to give you a pretty good floor in those categories. But yeah, I feel runs definitely underappreciated. They're kind of like the Brett Gardner of categories, just kind of not sexy, but it still give you production. I mean, come on. All right, let's move on to a pitcher here. And this doesn't go to anyone. This goes for all of us. I think we all can kind of agree that Julio Urias in the LA is a guy that you should be getting. Now, obviously, his ADP is rising since it's been announced. He is going to be part of the rotation. But why is it that we want to make sure that we have him when there's so many other young pitching options? Because this is a guy who, again, maybe his rotation spot isn't going to be completely secure, right? The leash might not be long because, you know, Dodgers obviously have a lot of different options there. Eric, once again, let you start out. What do you like about Urias?
To me, I think the talent was never the question. It was the playing time. And he's a guy, you know, I think we're going to talk about some other guys too, but he's a guy that with a shortened season, I think the risk is now not as high as it was before. I don't see the Dodgers having to load manage as much as they did before, playing all the games with innings pitched and whatnot. I mean, I think you were likely going to see him at a cap around, you know, 140 innings pitched. You know, maybe you get a little bit more, but I didn't see going above that. But if everybody is pitching 140, 160, whatever innings, then I really don't see his innings being that much worse than some of the guys that are going way above him. You know, he had a 26.1 K percentage last year. He's got really good swing and miss stuff. His ERA has always been low. The talent has never been in question. Right now, you know, when I was just kind of messing around with the rankings for short season stuff, you know, I kind of have him in like the low 30 range, where I'm looking at, you know, I even, you know, guys like Frankie Montas and, you know, David Price and Carlos Martinez and guys that have some risk baked into them. But now that I don't have to worry about innings as much, I think his upside is as high as most pitchers in the league.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you mentioned Price, looking at current ADP right now. Urias going ahead of David Price, Robbie Ray, yeah. Ryu, who, you know, last year with the Dodgers, yeah, had that amazing season. So definitely taking a risk here, right? This is a guy who obviously coming off serious injury, also had kind of hard time the year before and limited innings. So Nick, where do you stand on taking a chance on a guy who could break out, and we know the talent's there, like you said, or taking a more established arm, you know, a guy like Price, who's in LA right now?
Well, whether or not I take Urias in drafts, a lot of that's going to be just kind of how my roster stands at that point, because really the only thing I don't like about him is that his ADP is now rising, you know, now around that 150 mark. I liked him before they came out and said that he was going to be a starter. I liked him a lot then, and he just keeps rising. So now I think his price is coming around where I have him valued. But I love him for a breakout. He's always had the stuff. He is a former top prospect that has had weird injury problems. And the Dodgers have been very careful with how many innings they give him. He's got great swing and miss stuff. You want to see something sexy, go to his StatCast page. No one can hit the ball hard off of Julio Urias. His 83.2 average exit velocity was top 1% of the league. His 24.9% hard hit rate allowed is top 1% of the league. is 4.3% barrel rate, up 7%. You can't square up Julio Urias. And, you know, with the kind of innings restrictions taken away by the delay of baseball, he is a guy that I like quite a bit. And it's like, this kind of feels like the last year that you can get him at a really good price. Like, it just feels like this is going to be the year that he's finally a starter for the entire year. And it, you know, puts it together. And then next year, you're just, he's going to be a top 100 player in drafts.
Yeah, like I said, it's just unfortunate that that AP is climbing since that announcement. It's almost entering Luzardo territory, right? The young, exciting lefty who everyone's predicting to break out. But let it be known, we all liked Urias before it was cool. So we had him listed, I'm pretty sure. Let's talk quickly then. You mentioned some of these guys who the innings restrictions may not matter as much. I know, you know, Nick and I, we've talked about some of the obvious big names, you know, guys like Verlander, you know, Clevinger might benefit. But Eric, you had a couple names you wanted to talk about. Obviously, we talk about injuries and pitchers. We can't go without mentioning Lance McCullers, but also a guy that's kind of been forgotten, like Garrett Richards, who I guess he's also always hurt too. But what kind of a chance are you willing to take on these guys? Because obviously a lot of risk baked in there, but so much potential reward. So give me your take on those two guys, or if there's anybody else that you want to throw out there.
Yeah, no, I'm super in on both these guys. I was in on Richards, you know, prior to the delayed start, just because his ADP was so low. You know, and I think it's obviously still going to be low now. McCullers for me, we'll start with him. I think the issue was, you know, the Astros had wavered between, was it 120 innings or was it 140 innings? But he had a strict innings cap heading into the season. And anytime you're drafting, and you got a full season and your pitcher's going to go 120, maybe you're dropping him down the board. But again, as we talked about with Urias, if most of the pitchers are going 140, 160, I mean, we don't even know how many innings we're going to get in this season, then the innings cap doesn't really mean anything. So instead, you've got a pitcher who's had, you know, 26, 27, 30% K percentages when he's healthy. You know, his walk percentage is relatively low in that he's still at like an 18% K percentage minus walk percentage. Usually, you know, most of the ERAs are low, to high threes. I think it was like a 3.8 in 2018, his last full season. Despite, you know, their, nefarious dealings, he's on a strong team that's going to compete for wins, going to give him run support. So I think you're looking at a guy who's going to get you a good number of K's. He's going to keep the, you know, the ERA relatively low, especially given the fact that ERAs are ballooning. You're looking at a mid 1.2 whip, maybe 1.25, 1.67, something in that range. And he's going to be a solid source of wins. And I just think that when you don't have to worry about the innings limit, that becomes way more valuable than where he was before.
Yeah, McCullers definitely a guy worth targeting, unless you're just not drafting Astros in principle. Sure. That's another story. Nick, I'm going to throw you a curveball here because you are a points league guru. How do you value guys like this with, again, probably the most risk out of anybody because just always hurt, but so much potential return? But again, the points leagues, you know, just chewing up innings and the volume is more important. So where do you have those kind of guys priced?
Oh, well, they, you know, with the shortened season, guys like that get a big bump for me just because it's, you know, in head-to-head points, you're looking at the weekly totals. And there's a big difference if, you know, putting McCullers aside, like a guy like Paddock, who we know there's going to be some sort of restrictions, you know, before the whole, all of this got delayed, but if it's a situation where a guy's going to get shut down at September and that kind of restrictions, then I don't really want him because he's going to get shut down during the most important weeks of the head-to-head point season. But like with McCullers, I don't have to worry about, you know, him actually getting shut down, maybe skip the start and however Harold or manage his load. But the starts he gives you are going to be premium starts. So in a compressed season, pitchers like this where on a lot of points platforms, pitchers are going to be premium. Guys like McCullers, and I'm always a sucker for Garrett Richards.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like now and forever. Those guys get a big bump because limit their innings. I'll take the matchups when they're actual pitching. If they skip a start occasionally, whatever. I didn't spend very much on them in the draft.
Right. I think the most interesting thing, you know, you bring up Garrett Richards. The reason why I was in on him before the season and why I'm even more in on it now is that for him, it's never going to be like a load management issue, especially the fact that he's in his last year of a deal with the Padres. I mean, they signed him to a 2-year contract and he threw 8 innings for them last year. So basically they signed him for 2 years to just pitch this year. So they're not limiting his innings. He's going to throw. And when he gets hurt, he gets hurt. And let's hope it doesn't happen, but he also hasn't thrown over 100 innings since 2015. So history would suggest it is going to happen. But if you think about it, the difference between that and McCullers is if Richards gets hurt, you move him to your IL or you cut him depending on, you know, the severity of the injury. You don't have to worry about, am I putting him on my bench because he went to the minors for a couple of starts and then he's coming back up. And when he's healthy, I mean, right now, if I'm not concerned about the innings limit, if his, you know, 80, 90 innings and then replace with whoever I can pick up off the waiver wire when he gets hurt, you know, how, based on his history of production, how is that not worth a pick where we're currently picking, you know, Jose Urquidy and Mitch Keller and Dylan Cease and guys who we haven't actually seen do it when we've seen Garrett Richards do it? And I mean, he's had some dominant seasons. And even when he wasn't playing full seasons in 2017, 2018, I mean, he had, you know, top of the line stuff and with his K percentage and with keeping the ERA low and limiting the whip and stuff where it's like, I know that whatever innings I get from him, at least I believe that those are going to be high quality innings. And I don't know that for those other guys. And if it's a shortened season for everybody, I'll take the track record of success.
And that's an interesting point. We talk about risk. There's different types of risk. Risking the guy gets hurt. I mean, if he does, what happens? Like you said, you stash him or you cut him, and then you move on. If a guy comes in, you draft because it's so tempting, right? In those late rounds, the last round, you take that rookie. You know, you take the guy who looked really great in, you know, 2 September starts. He blows up, right? And he kills your ratios.
Right.
It's a little harder to undo that, right? If a guy gets hurt, I mean, the risk is you just replace him with somebody else. If a guy kills your ratios early on, you know, that's a little bit more risk to recover from. So all great points. All right. So, guys, those are our must-haves for 2020 if when the season starts. It will. We just don't know when.
It'll happen.
It will. Please come soon. Please come soon, baseball. But Eric, thanks for joining us. And
pleasure.
Thanks, Eric.
Please plug what do you got next? What kind of article can you possibly work Ruben Neto Door into this coming week?
Well, I told you about that. I mean, the first one is I've got a first base sleepers article coming out, which should be coming out hopefully soon, and then working on a second base one, which is, you know, my Ruben Neto Door article. I'll make sure that he's in there as well.
Yep.
So just working through some kind of deep cuts, guys that are going to be value late in the drafts in 12 team, but also late in the drafts for, you know, like your deeper leagues as well.
There you go. So your reminder that guys, draft season, it's just been extended, right? This is more time to read our content on Rotoballer, go over those rankings, really fine tune and tweak those rankings until they're perfect. And we're here to help you do that. All right, guys. Thanks for watching.